One-third of our nation's nightmare is over. The Dallas Cowboys finally signed someone. Welcome to Maggie and Perloff Show. Perloff here in New York. Maggie at the home studio. The Dallas Cowboys have reached a deal with CeeDee Lamb. $38 million signing bonus, over $100 million, $34 million per year. Maggie, why have we been talking about CeeDee Lamb all summer? We all knew this was going to happen. This is business as usual in Frisco. They got a deal done. I expected it. Honestly, nothing to see here. Let's move on and go 12-5.
All right. Well, if that was that easy and this was the last question that had to be answered by the Dallas Cowboys, then yeah, we'd all be in a great spot. But we know this was only the first domino that had to fall. And there's still a lot of work to be done with Dallas. Here's the one thing I cannot get behind today. The bouquets and the flowers at Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones's feet today. I don't know how many Cowboys fans are really breathing a sigh of relief. I'm sure there are a lot. But to say, oh, Jerry, he got it done. He did it. The old hustler. What did he do? CeeDee Lamb got everything. Apparently, they have been quibbling over $1 million, which to you and I is big money, but not to the Dallas Cowboys and not to their salary cap and not to anything. $1 million was never going to make or break the Dallas Cowboys. And it looks like that's essentially what this was all about. So, you know, to me, I can't say, wow, Jerry, like, did it again. He pulled it off at the 11th hour. Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous. This should have happened weeks ago. They should have been even further down the road on the Dak Prescott deal, which now we can talk about whether that gets done. But I can't exactly start throwing parades for the Cowboys. You set all in, and you signed one guy, the one guy wearing 88, who everyone knew was going to be a Cowboy for a long time.
I'm just curious, Maggie. Where is this person who said, oh, look, that old hustler got it done? There's nobody who said that. There's nobody throwing a parade. Cowboys fans know this drill like the back of their hand. Nobody said anything to that effect. Honestly, like, is anybody out there saying, oh, Jerry mastered this? I think the Cowboys, I don't think it was just $1 million. They were probably trying to get more years out of this deal like they always are trying to do. Mm. And all the players now want four-year deals. I don't think that this was just about $1 million. You're right. Everyone knew it was going to be $34 million. When Justin Jefferson and the Vikings signed for $35 million, everyone's like, oh, well, CeeDee Lamb is just as good, but maybe 1% lower. So it was always going to be $34 million. They were, I think, almost certainly arguing over the years. Here's my question, Maggie. Like, pushing this so close to the season, does this risk his health? Does this risk the Cowboys' chances of success? Was this too close to the sun with this contract?
Well, I'll tell you, if CeeDee Lamb pulls a hamstring tomorrow, then we're going to say it is. I don't know. I don't know if it's so like this or that, because I want to believe, especially someone like Lamb, great work ethic. I'm assuming he's keeping himself in tip-top shape. I know when I did a show with Bart Scott, he said he liked working out with his personal trainer more than the team trainers at times because it was so tailor-made to his body and it wasn't the sort of, oh, well, that what's good for all the receivers is good, you know, for me. And so maybe in some ways this ends up being better for his like conditioning and all that. You know, the playbook's not changing much. They said there's a few tweaks with some language and verbiage. No one's questioning whether CeeDee Lamb's not going to be able to get up to speed, you know, in another week. So I don't know about that. But if you're asking me who's the person who's trying to take victory laps for this, it's Jerry. And that should really tick people off. Now, I'm not sure how many people got to see this Clarence Hill interview with Jerry Jones. It's not on camera, which is probably not preferred by Jerry, but he's loose in this one. And he's letting the expletives fly about how he's the best general manager for the Dallas Cowboys. No one else can do this job better than he can. He's not going anywhere. He's 81 years old. He feels good. And kind of like no one else has their thumb on the pulse of the organization and football more than him. And he basically deserves this Lifetime Achievement Award because he bought the Dallas Cowboys in 1989. And that to me is scary because even the best leaders, even the guys with the biggest egos, the biggest decision is when you turn it over to someone else, a succession plan. Hell, there was an entire HBO series about it. It was awesome. When do you turn the keys over? And I think that the Dallas Cowboy fans are probably hoping sooner rather than later. And the fact they got CeeDee Lamb done and basically got CeeDee everything he wants doesn't mean Jerry still has the fastball on this one. So if you're asking who wants the parade, it's the owner/GM.
Do you really think Jerry's running the show there, Maggie? Do you really think Jerry's making all these awesome draft picks?
Well, he says the buck stops with him. So I don't know about the draft picks, but I think
that's a pretty big role of a GM. I think there's somebody else shadow running this team because they had another amazing draft this year. Like, amazing.
No, it's great. Will McClay and the guys behind the scenes who probably don't get nearly enough credit because Jerry's out there sucking up all the oxygen. Yeah, they probably do deserve a lot more praise. However, Jerry said in this article, and I have no reason not to believe him, and they treat him like this in public, so no one's undercutting him or undermining him, that the buck stops with him.
And the buck he's might the stop one- with him, but these, you know, there's obviously a committee going on, and I think you're painting a picture where Jerry Jones is sort of pulling the strings, Godfather style.
He's painting that picture, not me.
Yeah, but that's Jerry. Of course he's painting that picture. Why are you all of a sudden you taking Jerry at his word?
Well, I mean, listen, you and I now speak fluent Jerry. We were grad students a year ago. We spent a semester abroad, in Jerry land, and now we've come back with the Jerry fluency.
When you're general manager, of which I am.
Yeah. And he's not going anywhere, guys. I just think that whether the draft picks is different, right? Because the draft picks, I think, is a different department. I'm sure he's involved. But that slots in terms of how much these guys get paid. It's pretty easy, actually. It's kind of turnkey. When it comes to whether you're going to pay CeeDee Lamb or pay Dak Prescott or pay Micah Parsons, that's where Jerry wants the credit. That's where he's saying, I know where the buck stops, and it's up to me. I'm the final say. And so, you know, on what should be a very good day for the Cowboys, yes, you did get CeeDee Lamb done, finally. I just think I would hold off on, you know, feeling great about this because Jerry sort of doubled down that he's the guy. And I don't think that they've done this. I don't think they've handled these contracts in a great way. So for me, that would be very concerning.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I always thought CeeDee Lamb was going to get done, and it did get done. Obviously, the big question is Dak Prescott. And I'm still not even sure, as we sit here and talk about it, I'm not sure what the right move is. Jerry, if Jerry really is the GM, which I don't believe for one second that he drafted any of these guys, then he's got a much bigger decision than CeeDee Lamb. Will you give me that, Maggie? Like, whoever makes that decision is really running the show. And the goal is to win a Super Bowl, not go 12-5. And honestly, as we sit here today, I'm not sure I could tell you that the smartest GM in the world would re-sign Dak Prescott right now. They might move on and say, listen, you need a certain kind of quarterback to win a Super Bowl. I don't know if Dak is that. So you can't say that Jerry is making bad moves as a GM when it comes to that, because I think a lot of GMs would do exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, the really good GMs actually would have gotten Dak Prescott done a year ago.
But are you sure, though? Because the really good GMs want to win a Super Bowl, and I don't think Jerry Jones or anyone in Dallas is sure that Dak Prescott could win a Super Bowl.
Okay, well, and then again, the really good GMs would have someone in the pipeline that's maybe not Trey Lance, which is like a lottery ticket still. But it's a great point. I mean, what do you do with Dak? It's funny. Yeah, you and I have gone back and forth on this. It's like whatever way the wind blows, all these little different reports. We now have a massive bet on this Dak Prescott contract where I think that he's going to be gone after this year. You think he's going to stay. The loser has to go sit at a Waffle House for 24 hours. And for every waffle we eat, we get 1 hour lopped off the time. I mean, this is serious stakes here for you and I. And I'm going to be honest, Pearl, I woke up this morning very nervous. For myself, for my stomach, for my digestive system, for the amount of syrup that I might have to consume. Because CeeDee Lamb getting done and still having over a week to go to get the Dak Prescott deal done is making me a little nervous for our Waffle House bet. I'm going to be honest. It's the first time I thought, can I get out of this somehow? Or what is there a way for me to somehow snake out of this bet?
Well, I got two bites at the apple here, Maggie, because they were right. I still think the odds are against him signing Dak Prescott before the season starts, but I know they are reportedly talking.
Yeah.
I still think, and this is what I was counting on when we made this bet, is that after the season's over, it's going to be exactly like last time with Dak Prescott, where he lets his contract run out and then he signs a massive deal. Because if he's in a free agency market, the Cowboys need a quarterback. Dak needs a big deal. They're a perfect marriage in free agency. Like, I don't think they can quit each other, Maggie. I think, and is this the ideal way to run a franchise? No, but I still think, like, you're kind of ripping Jerry for the way, you're ripping whoever's running the team for the way they're running the team. We know that, you know, they know how to make a 12-5 football team. We have 3 years of evidence of that. So I feel like you're being a little overly critical of the CeeDee Lamb, not of the CeeDee Lamb deal in particular, but I'm not saying give Jerry flowers, but this is business as usual for the Cowboys. And I don't think the way we've been describing this offseason, it's been like it's total chaos there in Big D. It's just not. I think that this is sort of much more normal and kind of what we should have expected.
Listen, the biggest thing about the Cowboys, of course, we're talking about CeeDee Lamb signing his big extension yesterday and what does it mean for the team. The biggest thing with the Cowboys, and every Cowboy fan knows this, is the disconnect between the regular season and the postseason.
Right.
So, like, the fact that they're letting Mike McCarthy, if you're saying they've put together this great team and they play great and they are this great team, so they should keep things status quo, well, then why is Mike McCarthy on the hot seat? Nobody's won more regular season games over the last 3 years besides Andy Reid than Mike McCarthy. He should have a lifetime contract for 12 win seasons. Jason Garrett was turning in 8-8s. I know, but see, that's the thing about the Cowboys. This is the unique part and pressure of what this season is about, is because, yeah, you can say run it back 12-5 and they could win the NFC East. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And so you can have a Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. Mike McCarthy is a good coach. And Dak Prescott got better under Mike McCarthy. And nobody cares because they got smoked by the Green Bay Packers. And so if you were actually running this team looking at the regular season results, you'd sign everybody. You'd keep everybody the same. There's teams out there who would die for 12-win seasons like that and that kind of consistency. And they're not doing that. So they're showing you and telling you that 12 wins isn't good enough, and that creates chaos because now everything's on the table. It's not good to have a lame duck coach. It's not. Especially if you are actually happy with the results that he's giving you in the regular season, then this is, I disagree with you. I think that there's definitely shades of chaos here. It's not like burning to the ground, like guys getting arrested and stuff like that, but there's a certain type of organizational chaos because there's such a wide gap between the regular season and the postseason with this team.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And listen, I'm not going to argue about that fact that they've been disappointing in the postseason. But I think we create some of the chaos. Like most, you know, 31 other teams, if they had the same offseason, I think it would be viewed completely differently. And I know you don't like when I say this, but we look at the star just differently. Like every little move is inspected 10 times over. The reality is that they're actually a much more stable franchise than I think we give them the credit. I don't think it's chaos. But yes, I don't think they've gotten over the top, but there's definitely a stability here in a sense. At least I'll give you this. They've had the same GM team for a long, long time. Whether they know what they're doing, that's a totally different question. But I can't say that this is chaos. It feels, the chaos was that the hotel lit on fire. Other than that, I just think that this is, it's actually the opposite of chaos. It's the same thing happening again and again and again and again. It might be the wrong thing, but it feels like if you actually pull back, it's probably the most consistent franchise in the entire league.
Yeah, but see, here's where I'm going to disagree with you, is because you're saying that it's us, the media, because we put so much emphasis on what the Cowboys do because the fan base is so spread out.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think it's them. They play into this. Who are other coaches, if you were by the Dallas Cowboys metric, should also be on the hot seat, and these are not lame duck coaches. What has Sean McDermott done? What has John Harbaugh done for you in the last decade? These are other teams.
John Harbaugh?
I'm just saying, Pearl, these are other teams that need to get over the hump, right? Who
John
the questions
Harbaugh.
Well, he won a Super Bowl in 2012, so I'll give you that. But with Lamar Jackson, they have not gotten over a hump.
They win 14 games a year. John Harbaugh is not on the, there's no hot seat on earth that's going to have John Harbaugh on. Well, actually, a few years ago, he was on the hot seat. But regardless, like, yeah, I just, but
okay, what about Sean
though,
McDermott? Sean McDermott.
Yeah.
They win 12 and 13 games, the Bills do. They cannot beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
Besides talking to me, because I'm an insane Bills fan, have you heard one peep about Sean McDermott being on the hot seat?
Exactly. Because people care about the Cowboys.
No, it's because the Bills don't let him get.
Nobody cares if Sean McDermott's on the hot seat. Sean McDermott could walk into 97% of houses in America. No one would even know who he was.
No.
I mean, that's a point. Like, yes, Sean McDermott. Nobody cares about Sean McDermott's future because he's in Buffalo. I'm telling you, it's all about the Cowboys.
If Sean McDermott was in the final year of his deal, and so was Josh Allen, we'd be talking about it. This is not a total media conversation.
Oh,
how did the Cowboys, they've let this get to this point? And there are other coaches who, like, have success in the regular season who haven't gotten over the hump in the postseason, And it's not nearly the amount of chaos because they don't let them dangle out here like this.
We follow the NFL so closely on this show, and we have no idea the status of 85% of the coaches. I don't know where. I don't know if there are other coaches on the last year. Coaches' contracts are just not a thing that people talk about at all. Bill Belichick had this mystery contract out there for years that no one even had access to. So don't tell me that all of a sudden, like, Mike McCarthy's contract status would be a huge deal in any other team. I mean, you can look at so many different teams too. Like, I have no idea what the deal is with that guy. So
wait,
I think you can't. I know you don't like when I say it's a media story, but the Cowboys are a media story. Of course they are.
Off. Do you remember what happened with Mike Tomlin after they lost that playoff game to Buffalo? Mm-hmm. He got asked about being the last year of his deal, and he walked off the podium without saying anything. It was a story for weeks, and then they put out a statement, we've signed him to an extension. The other team, the Cowboys, are the ones who are responsible for this, not the media. Okay, the media, we cover them a lot. I'm not going
to
deny that.
But
don't tell me there's... Don't tell me there's not other coaches out there who could be on the hot seat, and the team takes care of it and makes it not a story. Jerry does the opposite. Mm-hmm. He pumps this up to the point where, yeah, this is pressure. This is major pressure, and we do know about Mike McCarthy's contract because they want us to know about it, and they want us to know about Dak Prescott because they like keeping themselves in the news, and they like having this all or nothing or whatever they're setting up for this year. Hmm. We do talk about other coaches, but the teams make sure that it, you can nip this in the bud if you want, if you're a team. You can papier-mâché this. They could have given McCarthy another year. It would have taken them off the lame duck status, and they have chosen not to do that. So I don't want to get blamed as the media when this is Jerry's situation. This is their fault.
There's no
not
blame.
Ours.
Nobody's. There's no fault. There's no blame. I think you're out of your mind if you think the Cowboys are generating this and not the media. I know as a fact there are two giant companies, ESPN and Fox, who had shed numbers that said, when you talk about the Cowboys, people tune in. So we are going to talk about the Cowboys 24/7. If you think the Cowboys are generating this and not the fan interest, it's not even the media, it's fan interest.
That's it.
I think that you're just dead wrong. Like, I don't care. They could have Paul Brown as the coach and GM. They could have the most stable. They could have Bill Walsh. It doesn't matter. We're going to talk about the Cowboys. The reality is the Cowboys have had, once again, one of the most boring off seasons of all time. But we've turned it into a five-alarm fire constantly every day. Is CD coming back? Are they going to re-sign Dak? What about Micah? It doesn't matter. We'll find something to talk about with the Cowboys. And the reality is we should be talking about Deron Bland's injury, and we don't even care about that. But the point is, like, they are actually a boring franchise in a sense. They draft offensive linemen every year, and they all turn out to be good.
Yeah,
that's boring.
That's one part, but keeping, again, having your coach on the hot seat, having your quarterback dangle out here like this, and I'll push back. We talked about Brandon Ayuk for weeks.
That was a waste of energy, too, but anyway.
Well, he's still not signed, and I don't know how the CeeDee Lamb contract, we'll talk about how that maybe impacts Brandon Ayuk. I understand. We like talking about the Cowboys, but here's the thing. They created this.
They did not. We did.
Who else is... What other coach is in the final year of his deal?
I have no idea. I don't know if Doug Peterson... I have no idea. I don't know where anybody is in any of their deals, except for you just mentioned, Mike Tomlin just re-signed his deal. I forgot about that. You have any idea? I know the first year guys probably had 3 or 4 years. Coaches, the length of coaches' contract are not common knowledge. You think they are?
Yeah. I think when they're on hot seats, because I don't...
How many years does he have left?
They just all said that if they don't get to the playoffs, they're all getting fired.
How many years are left on his contract?
I think one. Because he's not in the last year of his deal.
How about Dennis Allen?
Who knows?
Nobody knows the length of contract. I'm just saying that this final year of a contract for a coach is not necessarily the same as a final year for a player. But now we're arguing. We're getting nippy. We got to actually move on, and we got to talk about something more important, something more relevant. The 85 Bears, Maggie.
Oh, my gosh. I know. I'm so excited. Well, the 85 Bears, but how about Georgia football?
Okay. We could talk Georgia football, too, but... 85 Bears was a team that had the opposite of boring. They were the most interesting team in the history of sports.
We're talking
a little Georgia football. Can we just say who we have, Meg? Should we just give it up? Because people might think it's Mike Singletary. No, we have Kevin Butler, the kicker, who actually, for a certain generation, like every single member of the Bears was a celebrity, including the kicker, who was also... Was he the first Hall of Fame kicker in College Football Hall of Fame?
Yes, and he's going to be the honorary captain for the upcoming Georgia-Clemson game that's going to happen, this kickoff game in Atlanta, which is going to be awesome. I've already picked Clemson to win the ACC. I feel like I have a lot on the line there, but we have a lot to do, and Kevin Butler is going to join us in a few minutes.
Awesome. That's next, Maggie and Perloff Show. Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. That got a little ugly in the first segment, arguing about the Cowboys. Should we be alarmed? Should we be happy for Jerry? You can weigh in, 855-212-4227. But Maggie, this is really exciting. This is fun, you have to admit.
Yeah, absolutely love. Then we can talk to somebody who's made history in their lives. And that's Kevin Butler, who is a College Football Hall of Famer, not only a legend at Georgia, but also with the 85 Bears in Chicago as a Super Bowl champion. He is the honorary captain for the kickoff game, the Aflac kickoff game, I should say, in Atlanta. You had one of your greatest moments, Kevin. Thank you so much for joining us. Of your illustrious kicking career, one of your greatest moments actually came against Clemson. You nailed a 60-yarder against them. It's known as the kick. So what kind of memories does it bring up to watch Georgia and Clemson play this weekend?
Well, it's really exciting. I appreciate being with you guys, too, this morning. And, yeah, college football is here. And not a bigger start for the University of Georgia than when we opened with Clemson. You know, when back in the 80s when I played, it was a rivalry that, you know, pitted up the national champions of 80 and national champions of 81. We opened on Memorial night in 82 under the lights at Georgia. So it was a big game all the time. Recruiting was very tight. The schools are very close, and the competition back then was at the highest level in college football. So it ended up my senior year. We had gone back and forth. We lost my freshman year to them. They won the national championship. We beat them my sophomore year. We lost the national championship to Penn State that year. And we tied my junior year with each of us trying a 67-yard field goal and then a 66-yard field goal for each team. Both to no avail, and we walked away 16-all tie. And then my senior year, it came back. Clemson was ranked number 2 in the nation. It was our a big game for us early in the season. They beat us up in the first half. I think they were winning 20-6 at halftime, and we got back out there, got a couple of turnovers, scored some points, tied the game up, and we went down to the last few seconds, and we were out there for a 60-yarder, and Coach Dooley just put me out there, and I think he had all the confidence in the world I could kick it that far. We just didn't get many chances to do that, and luckily it wasn't a matter of distance. It was just a matter of making sure it went through the uprights, and it did, and that turned into a long Saturday night, and that turned into a long week, so it was a lot of fun.
Kevin, when you look at college football today, how different is it from the early 80s? I know it might look the same on TV, but behind the scenes, it feels like a different sport, almost more of a professional sport than it was 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's a good observation, and I agree with you. It really is. I've been doing radio for Georgia for the last 17 years, so the one thing I like to do at each game is I walk around that field and size up the other team, and then walk over there and size up Georgia. And, you know, I recall back in 2015, Alabama came into Georgia, and I walked around the field, and I walked over to our assistant who does all the headphones, and I walked over to him. I said, "We're about to get rolled." He's like, "I love our guys." I go, "I love our guys too, but that's the biggest damn team I've ever seen in my life." And that's exactly what happened. The depth of that team Alabama had that year had no drop-off. And I think that's where Georgia finds themselves now. Their depth resembles a professional team. You're going to play 17 games if you're going to win a championship now. That's an NFL season. The guys on a whole are bigger across the board than the NFL team. Does that make them better than an NFL team? No, but size-wise, they are bigger than an NFL team across the board. So that gives them a little bit of an advantage against teams that don't have that depth. And I think that's really what's going to play the biggest factor this year in the new playoff system, is those teams that can have some injuries and put that second and third team player in there and still not have a drop off of the performance.
Kevin Butler is joining us. He's going to be the honorary captain for the Aflac kickoff game in Atlanta, Georgia, and Clemson. Of course, a legend at Georgia as a kicker, a college football Hall of Famer, then went on to the Chicago Bears, won a Super Bowl with the Bears, played 11 seasons with the Chicago Bears. And I guess, you know, the fact that you're so honest about the team, Kevin, is great. If you can self-scout just for a moment with Georgia, you mentioned the depth and how big the team is and how fierce they look. If there's anything that's going to be standing in the way between Georgia and another national championship, what is it?
Well, I think it's replacing the players that made the team move. You know, first of all, receiver. You know, we lost Ladd McConkey. We lost Brock Bowers. Those two guys accounted for probably 55 to 60% of our downfield plays. Our plays came on third down. They were kind of unstoppable, and it's hard to replace that. So we've got to get some young kids and some transfers in that can create some separation on that that receiver position. And it's got to be complemented by probably our biggest question mark, and that's running back. You know, we've had some Etienne is in here from Florida, but we're not sure if he's going to make it to the game this weekend with some off-field issues that he has to be responsible for. And you know, we've got some great young players that we're going to see this weekend. But I think those are really the two positions that if you have concern at the University of Georgia, you need to see those guys step out. You need to see them create a little persona of who they're going to be. Are they going to be that go-to receiver? Are they going to be the tight end that kind of fills in for Brock? We're going to need at least two players to make that gap for Brock. He was such an unbelievable player. When you don't have somebody like that, you know, how is it going to affect the team mentally? Who is going to be that go-to guy in crunch time? And we're going to see some crunch times against a Clemson team that is very talented. They know how to prepare. And anytime you have 4 to 5 months to prepare for an opening game, every opponent's going to be formidable.
Kevin, who do you think the biggest threat to Georgia in the SEC is?
Well, you know, with the new schedule and having to go into Texas, I think that's a threat. I think going down to Ole Miss this year, Lane has done a great job of not only developing that program, but they went out and they played the free agent market, and they've made themselves stronger on that defensive line, the defensive front. I think that's kind of what they were lacking last year. So those are the two games that really stick their head up to me off the bat, going down to Texas, just a new area, a new atmosphere. It's going to be crazy. Hopefully a F1 car doesn't come through the middle of the stadium. they got everything happening that weekend in Austin. So it'll be electric, but I think Georgia understands how to play on the road. I think that Kirby has done a great job with, you know, kind of getting them in that business type trip mode. And when you have a college team that you're not quite sure how they're going to perform in a new environment, the more that you can keep them steady to a program, not let them deter one way or the other, that's one thing Kirby does a wonderful job with.
Kevin Butler is the College Football Hall of Famer. He's also the honorary captain for the Aflac kickoff game in Atlanta, Georgia, Clemson, legend at Georgia, and we mentioned also a Super Bowl champion with the Chicago Bears 85. Now, we talk a lot about old school coaches versus new school coaches on this show, Kevin, and there's no one more old school than Mike Ditka. So I'd love to know, can you walk up to a coach like Mike Ditka as a young kicker and say, "Coach, I got this from 60 yards. I've got this from 61. Can you lobby him to try to get in the game at that point?
Well, you got to be careful going up to Mike Ditka about anything. That's the first thing I learned. when I was drafted by the Bears, you know, obviously the Clemson kick was something that was mentioned. I kicked a lot of long field goals. So I went in there, you know, with people in Chicago and the coaches feeling like, well, you know, he's always going to want to kick these long kicks. And first game against Tampa Bay, I had made the team. It came down to right before halftime. And all of a sudden they're calling my name, and I run up there and he goes, "Try the field goal." And I was like, "Try the field goal? Where are we?" And it was a 64-yard field goal. And I got out there, it was right before halftime, and Steve Fuller was my Clemson quarterback, one of the retired numbers. He was my holder, and he's like, there, he goes, you got this? And I'm like, yeah, my heart was beating. I remember kicking that 64-yarder. It made it through the end zone, but I think it just barely got over Keith Van Horn's head, our tackle. And as I turned around, Dicka was already walking to me, and he just looked at me, he goes, don't ask me to kick a long field goal again. And I was like, I didn't even ask you for this one. What are you talking about? So he kind of nipped it in the butt right there. So I didn't ever go up to him and ask him for those type of field goals. You know, Chicago was so much different to me getting out there, working with the winds, kicking off of turf. You know, it was just things I'd never done at Georgia. You know, I always grew up playing on grass. We may had one game a year that was on AstroTurf. So it was an adjustment, but I think I had the right attitude that meshed with Coach Dicka. Coach Dooley gave me that opportunity, very disciplined coach. So I worked very hard, and that's really what got me accepted, not only by my teammates in Chicago, but by the fans. I used to be the leading scorer, as we were talking about. Bobby Gould beat me there. Several people beat me at Georgia. The only thing I got left at Chicago was I never had a kickoff run back. I can honestly say I probably had more tackles than any kicker in the NFL in modern history. I've tackled Deion Sanders, Barry Sanders, Herschel Walker, Mel Gray. Every time I tackled them, I would get hurt. So I'm not acting like I'm a football player, but that was just one thing that kind of endeared me to the fans of Chicago.
Kevin, we don't have a lot of time left. I have 1,085 Bears questions. I'm of that generation. I'll just ask one. Why do you think the Bears didn't win another Super Bowl? Why did Dicka and that your group not get another ring?
Well, we got beat. I mean, we got beat in the playoffs by Washington. That was really the one. Daryl Green ran a punt back late in the game. We had home field advantage. We didn't play sharp that day. We played good enough to win, but we didn't. And at that point, as you were talking about, y'all were talking about y'all being able to meet Jim McMahon. He came out with a book called McMahon. I remember getting on a bus and him going, hey, read chapter 6. And it's a real quick read. And I read it and I shut the book. I looked at him. I go, man, it was good playing with you. He's like, well, what do you mean? I go, man, you called our owner a few pretty bad names in this chapter. And it was probably about 3 weeks later. They traded him, if I recall correctly, in our preseason game. They came up to Jim, who was my locker mate, and said, you can take yourself over to San Diego's locker. We have traded you to them. Traded him the day of the game and sent him home after the game to San Diego, and that was the end of it. And it kind of fell apart. We got into free agency at that point. Wilbur Marshall left. He was the first guy that really hit free agency, and things started changing. I think the McCaskies found out that they weren't running their program, and Jerry Vannesi and Mike Dicka were, and that just didn't hold a lot of weight.
You got to be really excited about what Chicago has now. The Caleb Williams, just the preseason, Kevin, is enough to get everyone really hyped that this could be the greatest quarterback in Bears history. Maybe, not to put too much pressure on the young guy.
Yeah, well, he's got a lot of pressure on him. You know, Chicago put as much pressure on you as they can, but they sure look good in preseason. But as I always said, I don't think we won a game in our preseason year. We won the Super Bowl, so he's going to see a lot more than he's seen in preseason. That first game, the defense coordinator is going to open up their book. So it's still going to be a learning process for him, but he's got a lot of great talent around him. I really like their defense. I think their defense is loaded, and their defense is going to be able to keep them in games. And if he can get a little bit comfortable back there, he's got a lot of talent around him. So, everybody in Chicago is thinking Super Bowl right now. So that's the way we do it in Chicago.
Man, well, maybe we'll get you as an honorary captain for one of those Bears games. For now, though, you get this distinction to be at the Aflac kickoff game. You're the honorary captain, Clemson, Georgia. Great memories of the kick and your illustrious college football career and pro career. Kevin, thank you so much and enjoy the game.
My pleasure. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Wow. What a football life, Maggie. That is so cool.
I know. We didn't have enough time. I want to ask, like, who's the toughest person he ever played with? Think about those guys. College, pro. That's like how many tough guys?
Well, I mean, the Chicago Bears, that was nothing but tough guys. I mean, your quarterback was the toughest guy. Your coach was insanely tough. And then you had Wilbur Marshall and Mike Singletary and Dave Duerson and a bunch of crazy guys on defense. So I think that would have been an impossible question. Yeah, I feel like something was missing in that segment there, Maggie, our middle segment, in the middle of the hour. There's usually, what is that we usually do? I can't remember. Oh, this guy, Andrew Bogus, is sitting here. The whole time, Maggie, you're at the home studio today.
Yeah.
He's sort of quietly staring at me.
And stewing.
Here's the thing.
Good morning, folks. Can we just move the update and can we just do it in the next segment? Because we've got headlines. We've got big news from yesterday.
Maggie, whatever you want.
We have to call his agent. We're in negotiations. We have Jerry Jones
he's
on
holding
the phone.
In.
We have Jerry. Yeah, Andrew Bogus
is actually
holding in. He's holding in. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, here, right. But not working.
You figured it out.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up next, Andrew Bogus better deliver. Maggie and Perloff show. Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. That was great having Kevin Butler, former Georgia kicker, former 85 Bears kicker. God, that guy has clearly forgotten way more football than any of us know. I didn't realize that Clemson and Georgia went back-to-back in titles back in the day because I always thought of Clemson and Georgia as like a Peach Bowl matchup where they were good but not that good. But wow, now they're obviously have had four titles in the last 8 years, so that's going to be a great matchup. Meanwhile, it was tough to do the interview here in the New York studio, Maggie, because the whole time there's a certain person who is just staring at me. He's not even looking at his computer screen. He's just staring at me. He's like, when is the update coming? Typical.
Yeah, ask one more 40-year-old football question. Focus. Don't worry, I'll wait.
See, when you're not
those
here,
are Dicka stories, man. Yeah.
When you're not here,
it's gold.
Forget it. Like, he's not on his best behavior. So, all right, Andrew Bogus, give us some updates.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Headlines belatedly sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. Aaron Judge doesn't need help in yesterday's poll question against Shohei Ohtani, but he did this anyway last night in D.C.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep left center field. Back on the track as Judge leaps up against the wall and makes the catch. Oh, what a play by Judge. And he gets it back in, and they're going to double him at first. They get the double play. Oh, what a play by Judge, leaping at the wall, taking away a possible home run or at least a double, and somehow getting it back in, and they're doubling up the runner at first.
You'd think no one had ever robbed a home run before. Ricky Ricardo on Yankees Radio. Judge did slack off at the plate. No homers last night. Just the 1,000th hit of his career. The Yankees beat the Nationals 5-2. Their lead on idle Baltimore atop the AL East is 2 full games this morning. The Mariners dropped the Rays 5-1 while the Astros were losing in 10 in Philly 3-2. So Seattle is now 3.5 games behind Houston in the AL West. The Cubs had 21 hits and 8 stolen bases in an 18-8 rout of the Pirates. And it's loss number 101 for the White Sox, 9-4 to the Tigers. Those Cowboys apparently stayed busy after signing CD Lamb to that mega deal, flying free agent running back Dalvin Cook into town last night. It'll work out for them today. Cook, a bust for the Jets last season, but now says he's 100% recovered from shoulder surgery, feeling as good as he has in years. Puka Nacua at Rams practice yesterday for the first time since hurting a knee August 5th. Sean McVay says Nacua is on track for week one. And the Titans sent Malik Willis to Green Bay for a 7th-round pick. And finally, guys, Duke phenom Cooper Flagg has an NIL deal with New Balance, apparently as a 17-year-old targeting the 40-year-old dad market because both Pearl and I proudly wearing New Balance kicks this morning.
Wow.
You can see it on the stream. We're holding up our big N shoes.
Proud of you guys.
Are we cooler than Cooper Flagg if we already had New Balances?
So I went to the New Balance website to see what's the deal here.
They have a website?
Yeah.
No, it's two cans with string holding it together. That's how you call to order.
I thought you used a carrier pigeon to get your sneakers. That's how it worked.
There's a picture of Cooper Flagg holding a newspaper, and the newspaper says, Cooper Flagg, the intelligent choice. In his backyard by a rim. So they are presenting Cooper Flagg as the smart basketball player, but he's going to Duke, which is impossible to get to. So that's their ad campaign. Cooper Flagg, the intelligent choice. And he's reading the paper like he's looking at stock market quotes. Yeah. Is this a good ad campaign?
Don Draper would never. if you guys are Mad Men fans. You know, it's a real zag, as they say. You know, while everyone's trying to be really cool, here's Cooper Flagg just like, you know, reading the Wall Street Journal and, you know, relaxing in his dad shoes. It's going to hit some demographic.
Well, it's better than, I mean, whoever said, let's have Kawhi and Jack Harlow play one-on-one. That ad hit because they play it again and again. Here's some of their other bot gods. Here are their other guys they have. They have Jamal Murray. Is that an exciting player? He's a nice Canadian man. DeJounte Murray. They have the Murray's corner. Darius Garland. Oh, they have Tyrese Maxey. He's cool. Yep. They have Cameron Brink. I know they definitely
She's
use
cool.
her in a lot
yeah.
of ads.
Yeah.
Aaron Nesmith. That's probably not the
well,
best.
Well, they've got Shohei.
They got New Balance has Shohei?
Yes. Yeah. And they have Coco Gauff. I mean, so it's not as lame as you and I.
Well, New Balance are kind of cool. It depends. There's different kinds of New Balance also. There's like the dad shoe. It's all white, like a Steph Curry kind of number, which is not New Balance. But there's also like hip New Balance. Yeah. Like I live in Brooklyn, and they're actual cool people who wear New Balance, just so we're all clear about that.
I have a pair of colorful ones that I get commented on all the time as if I'm cool.
Yeah. You can. Well, I don't think it's like a $700 pair of Nikes, like it's not that cool. Like where people are like, oh,
it's
that's
not
a work
expensive,
of art.
But people have like cooler young people like him, and those are nice sneakers. I'm like, thank you.
Well, that's that. Manny and EJ, you guys are both younger and cool. What do you think of New Balance?
They're all right.
I mean, I wouldn't wear them.
No. I believe EJ said I wouldn't be caught dead, or something probably. To that effect.
Yeah. Because Pearl asked me what would happen if I went to the courts wearing New Balance, and I was like, I'd get laughed off the court. Are you kidding me? I want to play that day. So I don't. I'm surprised by
easy
this.
Easy knees. Still... Maybe you should be wearing New Balances.
Oh, well, fear.
Good support. Good support.
Right? I got hurt at Nikes. But like my question though about that though is like Duke is a like kind of famously Nike school. Like, is he going to be wearing New Balances playing for Duke?
Nope.
He can't. Right.
Yep.
So this is purely like a hey, like when you get to the NBA, dude, like this is when we're going to really cash in on this, because aside from him, maybe some commercials, NIL stuff on his Instagram, they're not going to get much pub from this.
Oh no, I think they're going to get more pub from him not wearing them on. They're getting a ton of pub. This story was huge, EJ. I totally disagree.
I mean, he's from Maine.
But he's not wearing New Balances in the games. Then, like, what difference does it make?
Because he's going to be in a lot of ads that are going to run during the game, which is so funny. Because he'll be in ads. I mean, come on, Cooper Flagg. I think it's a name, by the way. Cooper Flagg. It's such a cool name. If his name was, like, Billy Smith, I don't think he has a New Balance deal.
I mean, he almost made the Olympic team. I think he would be really, I think even if he was Billy Smith, I think we don't. But the fact
that
he's
Ernest Pendleton.
I totally disagree with that. I think Cooper Flagg is the coolest name ever, and I think that's a huge part of this, and I will not come off that take.
I agree with that.
Wow. All he's, name
he's
team?
A cool name.
Yeah, I mean, like Ace Bailey, there's a guy who's prospected 2 years who has a difficult name to say. He's nothing to anybody. He's
Victor
never going to
win Wembanyama by chance?
No. I mean, he's going to get, like, I don't even know, like Etonic or Saucony.
You think AJ whatever is going to he's going to get
AJ DeBenza?
Basement sneaks?
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, but then you're wrong.
No, you realize
one of the most famous athletes of all time is named Tom Brady. It's the lamest obvious
company.
Name.
Yeah, but you don't think LeBron is in the Jordan LeBron debate because his name is LeBron? Of course.
The other guy's Michael Jordan. It's like the two.
You know how hard it was for Michael Jordan to get that stature? He had to actually work for it. All right, coming up next, we have a quarterback battle. One quarterback battle left to settle. We'll do it.